Welcome to Lawyer Business Advantage. This podcast is dedicated to helping attorneys earn more money, get better clients, and spend more time with family. I'm your host, Ale Yajnik, founder of Law Firm Success Group. Smart business guidance for small law firms begins in 3, 2, 1. And it's my pleasure to welcome back to the Lawyer Business Advantage podcast, my friend Bruce Lefevre, the client whisperer. Bruce, welcome to Lawyer Business Advantage. Great to see you again.
It's great to be here. It's always a good conversation with you. So thank you for having me back.
My pleasure. You're one of those guest members that when we have an episode, always gets a lot of traction on LinkedIn, lots of great comments flying back and forth. So you offer a lot of insights for our audience and they appreciate it. So glad to have you back on the program. How have things been going with you?
Things are good. The world is an interesting place and it's always changing a little bit. But as we head into 2024, there's some real opportunities, I think, to with some stabilization in the legal market. There was a lot of turmoil in COVID and that time to really help, you know, those good firms really excel. And some of those really good firms are smaller firms these days.
Why do you think that's an opportunity for these smaller firms?
Well, because I think in the past, some of your clients have come out of big law and, you know, it's the grind and this is the way it has to be. And the truth is, it doesn't have to be like that. There are a lot of lawyers and other professionals. I work with, you know, some people that aren't lawyers even. It doesn't have to be that grind. If you're working with better clients, you have a better relationship. They get, you know, they always say, you get me. You're able to be an advisor, which means that the dynamic is very different. And if you're working with people that create profit and opportunities for you to do your best work, but aren't the headaches, life actually is a lot better. A lot of that grind comes from clients who are headaches that want something different than what you're providing, or they've got particular demands. Those aren't necessarily bad demands. They're just not a good fit for you. Someone else thrives on those clients.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. One of my first clients that I had, first when I got started working with attorneys, he wanted to build this book of business. And one of the things we did is we shed all the clients that were draining his energy. And once we did that, boy, oh boy, he was able to bring in business. He was happier. He did better work for his clients at all. It was a virtuous cycle that really contributed to it. So yeah, absolutely spot on. And also, attorney entrepreneurs, just wanted to share with you all, I'm actually a client of Bruce's. I worked with Bruce, what was it, a couple of years ago, Bruce?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I think. And we were at an interesting point in my practice where we were doing a lot of group coaching and weren't sure if we want to continue with that. And thanks to Bruce's help, we actually pivoted off of that and went to our one-on-one model that we're doing today. And yeah, Bruce, that has continued to pay dividends. So really appreciate working with you and the insights you provided to me as well.
Well, and just to highlight that, it wasn't that your coaching clients weren't thrilled with you. They were absolutely thrilled with you, but there were different expectations as to what you wanted to do with the business and what they were seeing from it. And that is why you pivoted.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Not that you're not a good coach.
Well, I appreciate that. I think I'm pretty good and I am fortunate to have an amazing team, which in many respects is even better than myself. So together we make a really good combination. But you sent us down that path, you know, the insights that we were able to glean from that project really helped us make that transition. So it's been awesome for us and awesome for our clients too. You know, we work with a lot of attorneys. We only work with attorneys. You work, Bruce, too, with a lot of attorneys, and attorneys are experts. You have this thing called the expert trap. And I got to tell you, I was like, I saw this and I went, oh my God, because I think my LinkedIn profile is something like, you know, law firm growth expert. And I went, oh geez, I'm falling into this trap. What is going on? So Bruce, share with us a little bit what this expert trap is.
Sure. And just as a disclaimer, there's nothing wrong with being an expert. There's some things that experts do that cause the trap. So just imagine, you know, a pyramid of, you know, a profession. We'll talk about lawyers here. And then at the big fat part at the bottom is people that do good work. You know, God bless them. They're the foundation of getting stuff done is people that do good work. In the middle, there's people that bring knowledge and expertise. And then at the top, there's people that provide guidance for decision making. And I call those COGs, experts, and advisors. Now, when you're a COG or an expert, you're actually reactive because you respond to someone else, the client. If you're a COG, someone else directs your work. If you're an expert, you use your knowledge and expertise to answer questions. And then the advisor at the top is in a proactive role because they're working with the client to make decisions, shape the questions that get asked to the experts, shape the questions about what they're going to do. They're part of the decision process. So those are the roles. That makes sense to you?
It does. And this is one of the interesting things that I always like to play with these models and apply them to law firms, because the business of law is insane. I don't know of any other business that runs this way where the expectation is, you know, on the managing attorney, they have to know it. So they have to be an expert in their area of law. They have to do the work. They have to manage their team. They have to run their business and they have to go bring in the work. It's always interesting taking these different roles and projecting them into a law firm and seeing where things shake out. So let's see if we can go through this together. The COG, I guess, would be like an associate attorney, someone who does good work at the direction of maybe a supervising attorney.
Yeah.
When it comes to this expert and this advisor, most attorneys I know are sort of playing both roles. Tell me if I'm wrong there in your experience. How do you separate those two?
So we're going to come back to that as we talk a little bit more. But yeah, a lot of attorneys play both those roles. The expert can be the person that has over some time has accumulated knowledge and expertise, and you know, they're a resource for other people. And then the natural progression for some is to become advisors, because advisors usually are also experts. But instead of answering questions, they're helping to shape the questions. The difference there, it's not that advisors are different than experts, but they've transcended just the expertise of, you know, Mr. Client, ask me questions and I will tell you the answer to, you know, Alay, what, let's talk about what your actual decision, you know, your goals are and how do we get there?
Got it. I see. Okay, I understand. So maybe to put this into maybe an example, if we take trust and estates, a trust and estate expert would basically take that, you know, intake questionnaire, which has all the client's, you know, desires and wants on, and convert that into a really good, you know, estate plan, and would go back to the client with other questions if they need to, but they would just do that work based on what the client asked. An advisor might sit down with the client either before they get the questionnaire or after they get the questionnaire and ask them, look, what is it you're actually trying to achieve with this? How does this fit into the larger context of your family and the transfer of wealth? What other issues are you concerned about? Is that what we're talking about here?
Who else do you need to talk to? I mean, think about it from an IP attorney, from a standpoint of, tell me about your invention so we can file a patent, to the advisor saying, you know, what you really have is you want to do something much longer and people can't reverse engineer this. This should be a trade secret. We're actually not going to file a patent for you. That's the advisor. The expert would never say that. Maybe if you ask them very directly, but now the burden is on you to ask, to know what questions to ask. And if we already know the questions, well, we can now start to go get answers. So the really interesting part about this is not the roles. I mean, yes, we can look at the roles, but how are they valued?
Tell me more about that.
So let's flip that over to the other side. So if you're a COG, the market sets your price. You're basically a commodity. You're largely interchangeable. If you are an advisor at the top and you're providing guidance, really you should be compensated, or your value is based on what can the client do because of what you do. I call it your impact. It's not what you do. It's not the task. But from a standpoint of, it's not the filing the patents. It's the ability to get value from an IP for the company. And that may be through trade secrets. That may be through a patent portfolio. That may be all sorts of things. That could be licensing. There's lots of ways that you have impact on the client. So it's not what you do. It's what they can do because of what you do.
And so the assumption there is, in an advisor, you would actually be able to bring in a larger deal potentially because you're doing more, you know, more for the client than just what they asked you to do. Is that right?
It's not necessarily a larger deal. It may very well be a larger deal, but it's greater value from the client. They can see your value and they say, oh, you are really valuable to my business, because tasks can be commoditized. You think about it from a contract standpoint, a lawyer who drafts a contract. Okay, well, there's tasks and that's the deliverable. And they think, that's my deliverable. I create these well-crafted contracts that, you know, take into account all the nuances, but the deliverable is a piece of paper or some, you know, electrons. The impact is, what does the business do with that contract? They're able to go in and do a joint deal that's going to provide, you know, create a $10 million line of business. It mitigates risk. When you think about the CEO, that's the client of the attorney, when you talk about impact, you're speaking CEO. When you talk about here's my deliverable, the contract, you're talking about tasks. Now, the contract may be the same words, but the way it's perceived by the client is very different. And in order to be that talk about impact, you have to know how does it improve the client's business as opposed to here's a contract, you go figure out what the value is.
So that's interesting because it brings up a question that I have, which is what are clients going to pay for? Are they going to pay for the advisor who's bringing them this nebulous sense of value and asking really good questions? Or are they going to be paying for the person or the actual deliverable that's being done?
Well, let's do that. And that's where we really get into what I call the expert trap. So the cog, let's call them a commodity. They're easily interchanged. The advisor, their value, and we can talk about whether they get paid for their value or not, but that's a separate conversation. They are valued far beyond what the legal tasks are because they're a resource. They're providing advice or shaping questions. It doesn't have to be necessarily psychological advice, but from a standpoint, well, let's make sure you're asking the right questions. Did you think about this? The expert, and there's nothing wrong with being experts. Experts are really valuable. The problem is people that sell like experts. And so think about how experts sell. Here are all the reasons you should buy from me. I have a 35-page CV, so I must be the best choice for you. And then if I am your potential client and I show the slightest bit of interest, you then start piling on and telling me more and more and more and more reasons. And pretty soon, I'm overwhelmed. Our brains can't handle that. You're telling me that, well, 15 years down the line, you're going to be in this situation and I will be able to, and it's like, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on today. And so I become overwhelmed. And so I can do a couple of things. I could, I'm going to step back now and say, whoa, I need to like think about my options. It's too complicated. So I might come back to you still and hire you, but now I've probably looked around. So now I'm more fee sensitive because if I don't know what the criteria are, the default is going to be price. The second thing I could do is I could go to a competitor. You could lose me. And maybe it's someone that I hadn't even considered initially. So by talking too much, you actually lost a client. But that's not even the most common. The most common is that I just throw my hands up and I do nothing because I'm just overwhelmed. Change is hard. You've made it hard. It's confusing and complex. And so I just don't do, I just, maybe this just isn't.
Yeah, because when people... When and people are overwhelmed, they have a tendency to just shut down and do nothing.
Yeah. The biggest competitor for most people is do nothing. And so what happens is as the expert, you think, oh man, I gave it, 150%. He just didn't get it. It's just bad luck. But in fact, that you essentially had me, I was willing to be a client and then he kept talking. And that's the expert trap that people fall into.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you clarified that. I couldn't agree more. There's a phrase that is very popular, which is people don't care how much you know unless they know how much you care. And so by establishing that empathy, that trusted advisor, that, hey, look, we're going to get through this together. I want to do what's in your best interest, even if you don't hire me. But if you have that mindset, which ironically is a mindset that I know you have, Bruce, and something that I aspire to have as well, it really does work versus piling on with, I've got 20 years experience doing this and 30 years experience doing that, and I've done this and I've done that and blah, 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 and it's all about me. And by the way, here's all these things you haven't considered. And one interesting aspect of that, so you and I are both small business owners and we both, have hired attorneys and they have us as clients. One of the things that I find really interesting with certain types of businesses with these experts is they don't get the business owner mindset with regards to risk, right? They take a very, I'm an expert, so I am going to address all of your risk. But as a small business owner, addressing all of the risk can be very expensive. And so we may actually want to take some risk and trade that off versus a lower legal bill. And I think if you're just an expert, to your point, you're going to be going for the zero risk solution because that means you've done right by your client. Right? That's the expert perspective is, I'm not going to give my client any risk. There's no possible way that this can come back to bite them. I've done everything that I need to do. But an advisor might be able to talk with the client and understand their situation and give them another solution, which maybe has a little bit of risk, but it's risk that the client knows about and it's risk that they're willing to take.
So I will phrase that a little bit differently. I think that it's the expert, as you described them, you know, take no risk, is really focused on themselves, and that is covering their ass, to use the term of art. And that is that if something goes wrong, I have to eliminate the chance that it was my fault or come back to me. Now, I learned that lesson when I'm back in my corporate days and had lots of corporate attorneys, and you know, many of them, you know, come from the school of no, you know, we know about that, the stereotype, but had a really great corporate attorney that in one case who always asked business questions. I was the business owner, and she would say, Mary Pat would say, have you thought about this? You know, there's a risk here. And sometimes I'd say, yeah, I've thought about that. It's okay. And other times I'd say, oh, wow, I hadn't really thought about that. And she was clear. I was the business owner. She was there to provide advice, but it was my decision. Now, if something, you know, came back that she hadn't even thought about, then, you know, maybe it would be different. But that's a mindset where thinking about what is the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal should be improving the client's business. The ultimate goal should not be eliminating risk.
Right. And understand, for all you attorneys that are listening that are thinking, oh my God, I'm not going to commit malpractice. This is really, that's not what we're saying. Right? We're not encouraging anyone to commit malpractice. And there's lots of ways that if a client does choose to take some risk or even chooses to, you know, ignore your advice in certain areas, there's ways that you can protect yourself from doing that.
And don't think that it's a trade-off between, oh, make more risk for lower legal fees. If you are actually providing advice that the business owner can act on and you're aligned with them in terms of improving their business, being able for them to make a decision that they are fully cognizant of what the risk is, but the business return is higher, that's worth more to them. You are actually have increased your value to the business owner, your client, not decreased it because you're doing less. You're actually doing more. It's just there may be less legal work.
Yeah, and the business owner will really appreciate that, and they will come back to you, and they will also refer you. And the same thing goes if you're working with, you know, individuals as well. If you get their situation, and if you give them counsel that's grounded in their actual situation, they're going to appreciate that.
Absolutely, and that's where you become very, very difficult to displace. And an expert or a cog is pretty easy to replace. The expert says, "Oh no, I know so much; they can't possibly replace me." Well, until someone cheaper and with more answers comes along, then you're easily displaced. That advisor with the guidance role is very, very difficult to displace because the benefit is some intangible, but it's really, really valuable. And that's confidence. And that comes down to alignment with the goal with the client. Do they feel that your goals are aligned with their goals? That's trust. Trust is worth a lot.
Totally.
And
is.
You need to back that with knowledge. You can't be a first year attorney and say, well, I'm going to provide guidance and all this. You don't have to be able, you know, the advisor can answer lots of questions. What they don't do is they only answer for the client the questions that are relevant. They don't try to answer all the questions the client conceivably could ask. That's what the expert does.
Yeah. And sounds like you've laid this out, Bruce, as a progression. So you start off as a cog or an associate, right? Do good work. Then you move to an expert where you're really good at your subject matter area. You know all of it and you're very capable. And then you move to an advisor. It's not possible to skip steps. Is that right?
You can't skip steps, but you don't have to progress. Some people are happy to be cogs. You know, just tell me what to do. Now they're not going to have the rewards of the greater value. There's a lot of experts that just aren't. They're not suitable to be advisors. They don't want to give advice. They won't go out on, you know, my job is to eliminate your risk. Well, that's a terrible advisor. And so but you don't have to fall into the expert trap because you don't have to sell like that stereotypical expert. You can say, hey, my value is in answering questions. I have an incredible wealth of knowledge. Let's find out what your questions are. I'll answer them. Now that's much cleaner. You're not overwhelming them to say, wow, Alain is great. Whatever questions I have, he can answer them. But you only ask answer the questions I ask you, so I'm not overwhelmed. Now, the advisor goes to the next step and says, well, what questions should you be asking?
All right. So, Bruce, I want to jump in here, make sure we get some tangible stuff for the audience to take away. So, first question, how do you know, or how do I know, I guess, how do I know if I'm an expert or an advisor?
One is the expert's reactive. Are you reactive to client? Reactive isn't bad. I mean, it's not a pejorative. It's just you're reacting to the client. The advisor is proactive. Are you sitting on the same side as of the table and guiding the client, or are you an ally of them and a resource for them? And like as you said earlier, there's most experts have most advisors are built on expertise, but they've learned to kind of modulate that so where they don't have to throw all their expertise into every situation. And so that's the biggest is, are you reactive or are you proactive? If you're waiting for the client to ask you something, you're being reactive.
And we can talk about, how to build that and all that in the details, but that's a great test. So if you're reactive, you're more of an expert. And if you're proactive, you're more of an advisor. So the second question, Bruce, the follow-up question is, if I'm an expert and I want to become an advisor, what are some tips that you have for me on how to do that?
So ask this question, and this question can come up in many different contexts, is how does X, and that could be this contract, that could be this provision, that could be part of the relationship, how does X improve my client's business? And so if you're saying this provision needs to be in the contract, well, how does it improve the client's business? And you can say, well, it eliminates this risk of, if a meteor were to wipe out, all of Northern California, it would, absolve us of liability. Okay, but at what cost to the client's business? Okay, so now we have this big cost for this insignificant risk. Let's face it, you're going to have bigger problems with your business if it's, meteor wipes out Northern California. And that can come into how you conduct, interviews with the client to figure out what it is that they want. The ultimate test is, are you aligned? Are your goals aligned with the client? Now, that's a very proactive statement. Once again, talking about proactive, reactive. And with my own clients, I always say, I am not successful when I get your check. I am successful when you are successful. And I always get the check before, they're successful, but that I don't see it as success until they're successful. And if the client perceives that they are confident that your goals are aligned with their goals, which means that your actions will inherently be aligned with their goals, that's the basis of trust. That's the basis of being an advisor. Expertise does not make you an advisor. Trust makes you an advisor.
Love that. And I can totally relate to that because when I first started coaching, I have an extensive background in business and working with my initial clients, it was the business problems were pretty straightforward. I remember my first client, this was before I started working with attorneys. They're actually a pest control company and they're terrific. I think they're still in business today and doing really, really well. But I ended up working with them for, like 2 weeks because the first session we had, I think they walked away with, and I'm not kidding, like 21 action items because I was just like, Here's an issue. Right. It just utterly overwhelmed them. And after like the second session, they called me up and said, you know what? We just can't take this anymore.
That's called the idea factory.
and of course, now I'm much better as a coach. And so most clients take far fewer action items and we make sure not to overwhelm them. But yeah, I can totally get that. And tell us a little bit about, how you kind of evolved from an expert to an advisor and how the journey went for you.
So, my own progression was, I've done lots of things. I'm like you, I've got a very broad background in various business types of activities and roles, and found that, this is an area where I can have a huge impact, that particularly with the smaller mid-sized firms, if they're running well, they've got high margin. You know, they if they can execute well, they can make a lot of money. And if I can help them tune that dial a little bit, it can have a huge impact on their, not only their business, but their life and their livelihood. And those really are connected, because I'm not one of these just work more hours, you get more money, and that's success. It's like, what are you going to do with it? You know, if you end up, you know, addicted to drugs and alcohol and divorced and don't ever see your kids, that I don't care how much money you make, you're not successful in my eyes. And so by working with better clients, you can have, you can actually, you know, have your cake and eat it too, to use a terrible, you know, cliche, because you're working with better clients who appreciate what you're doing. You're providing better value. You're able to now get paid for more of that value. As you said, it's a virtuous cycle. Now you're working with people that you do your best work for, that the style, and let's not forget that the style is a huge component of this. It's fit. It's not just that you can do this particular legal work. It's that you can do that particular legal work for this particular type of client. That's where the real enjoyment comes. It's not from, you know, cranking out legal work. It's for working with great people that appreciate you and you know, say, you get me. And that's where the joy comes from it. So that's how I ended up, you know, where I am. And I found that by actually going out and talking to people's best clients, which is, you know, kind of the core of what I do, that I'm able to bring back stuff that's really credible, because it's people they know really well. It's not the client they want to have. It's the client they've had that's, that they know is valuable. And then it's really actionable, because it's stuff that you're actually doing. Now, most of the time, you don't realize what it is that you're doing, so you don't give it a lot of value. You think, oh, it's just the right thing to do. Nobody notices. Well, if you peel the onion back enough, then suddenly they realize, oh, yeah, that's really valuable. Now you start talking that way to them, and it's like their lights, you know, the lights go on. And it's like, oh, this is, you get me, which is the magic word that leads to trust. And trust is what leads to these great relationships.
Love that. And Bruce, we're going to continue the conversation here on this next podcast episode. Bruce, if someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way is you can find me on LinkedIn, or you can find me via my website. It's eastwoodstrategy.com, all spelled out, or on LinkedIn. I'm Bruce Lefatre. I'm the only Bruce Lefatre that's ever existed in all the world time. So you shouldn't get me confused with anyone else. And I either way will connect with me, and I'm always happy to talk with people and share a little insight. And if I can help you, great. If I can make a friend and get, you know, spread the word, that's good too.
Awesome. Bruce, thank you so much for being on Lawyer Business Advantage today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Lawyer Business Advantage podcast. One thing that would really help both us and other new potential listeners is for you to rate this show and leave a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you tune in to listen. And I want to hear from you, so connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know what you think of this episode. And if you are a solo or an owner of a small law firm, and you're looking to earn more money, attract better clients, or reduce your stress, we would love to talk with you to see how we can help. Request your free law firm assessment by visiting lawfirmsuccessgroup.com. Again, that URL is lawfirmsuccessgroup.com. We look forward to talking with you soon. Thank you for listening. My name is Ale Yajnik. Until next time, remember, you can seize freedom. You can embrace happiness. You can build your perfect practice.